So there isn't going to be a hook or anything on this episode. This is just going to be me talking about my dad. He passed away on November 28th. So I just wanted to talk about that a little bit and maybe try to process or come to terms with or vent. I'm not sure what I was doing here, but here it is.
Welcome. And this is Far Betterment.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Far Betterment. Today, I'm going to be my own guest. Thought I should talk a little bit about what's been going on lately and things like that. Maybe address some things I haven't really addressed or talked about or really told a lot of people. It's been a long 3 weeks. We've been gone for over 3 weeks from my house. We've only been home 4 days. In that time, we just got home a couple days ago and finally got a chance to breathe a little bit and relax. Not relax so much, but at least more so than we were in the last few weeks. So I guess I'll just jump into it and kind of wanted to talk about my dad. So I know it's been a running theme in most of these episodes, and the reason being because he passed away while I started recording this. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit and kind of, you know, since I haven't really told everybody, I guess this is my way of talking to everyone without actually having to talk to them. So my dad passed away on November 28th. At that point, we hadn't really been talking at all. I haven't talked to him in maybe 2 years or so before that. We had a falling out. My dad was an alcoholic, a major alcoholic, you know, something me and him both had in common, but at least for the last 2 years, 2 years on November 29th, I got sober and stopped drinking, and, I made a promise to my kids, my wife, that I wasn't going to be the person I was anymore. My dad had a lot of trouble overcoming that, and that's not to say that I'm better, but I guess I was able to overcome it and he wasn't. And so he spent his life from about age 14 until he died, drinking really heavily, and sometimes that caused him to be just the absolute meanest human you could ever meet, and he'd go off on these rants and just make you feel like you didn't belong on the earth, make you feel like you were below human. And so the last time we spoke, it was one of those times, and I kind of just decided that I was just going to stop. That was enough. And so I got really angry and I stopped talking to him. And then about November 15th or 14th, I got a frantic text from my uncle, my dad's brother, saying that my dad was in the hospital and that he was dying. And to be honest, I didn't really believe them. I for some reason, my mind immediately jumped to my family's trying to manipulate me into talking to my dad again. And, you know, that was pretty quickly dispelled and called around a bunch of hospitals until I found him. And I guess I would say I almost immediately regretted that, because I got made the surrogate in charge of, you know, all medical decisions regarding my father. So I almost instantly regretted it. I wish I hadn't looked for him, but I'm glad I did, because I'm glad in the end I got to give him a fighting chance, at least. It was really up and down for quite a few days. I mean, he lived another 2 weeks, and I really trusted the doctors to tell me the right decisions, and to decide, you know, if we should continue treatment or not. And so I wanted to give him the best chance that I could. The first day they were telling me it was just a dire situation, and he was absolutely not going to make it, and I needed to start making arrangements. And then, you know, it seemed like he improved a little bit, and then we were back to making arrangements, and then he improved again, and then we were back to making arrangements, and then finally he improved enough for one day that they told us to hold off on stopping life support. And so we waited 24 hours, and it just so happened to be my wife's birthday. So we ended up, I don't know why I keep saying we. I was the one who had to make the decision. And so with the doctor's recommendation, I made the decision to stop life support. And I think that I really, really tried to bring him back, because I didn't want to be the one to make that decision. I didn't want to be the one, especially with our history, to make the decision to keep my dad around or not. I didn't think that was really fair to him. Maybe not to me either. But it was my responsibility, and I know that he would have trusted me with that responsibility. Growing up with my dad, or lack thereof, it was a really bumpy road, to say the least. I was always really scared of him. He was just a scary person. He was just this big, hulking guy, 6'2", worked out a lot, so he was really big, muscular guy, and he had a crazy temper, and he really hated my mom. And so, you know, and I was a big, big mama's boy when I was a kid. So, you know, of course I took her side in everything. And so I was raised to be fearful of him. I was raised to worry that he was going to kidnap me at any moment, and that he was going to hit me and hurt me. And I did see some of that abusive side at various points in our lives, and which made me more fearful, of course. But I was young, and so, you know, I was afraid. And so we used to go down and visit him at my grandma's house, my grandma and grandpa's house. And I don't know if they were supervised visits or whatever, but my mom would always be there, my grandma and grandpa and my dad. And I remember those times were good times, because I remember he used to play with me in the yard and sit on the couch with me, and play with the remote control car and things like that. So those were good times. And shortly after, though, my mom and him, I think, officially got divorced. And my dad and my mom really, really didn't like each other. And I think they weaponized me when I was little. And so they decided to use me every chance they could to get back at each other. And I didn't really realize it when I was a kid. But looking back on it, they really did. So basically, my dad and my mom fought over custody. My mom got custody ultimately. And I'm not sure my dad ever really wanted it, honestly, other than just to get back at her. But he ultimately won visitation rights, of course. You know, a dad should have those. And so I would go with him every other weekend. I remember the first time I went, I was absolutely terrified. I was kicking, screaming, at the suggestion of my mom and grandmother. Kicking and screaming in the middle of the street as my new stepmom, or I guess she wasn't my stepmom yet, but as my new stepmom and grandma and my dad were dragging me out of the house. I kicked and screamed so hard that they finally just let my mom come with them. And so she came with us, and we had this awkward visit. And after that, I started having to go every other weekend to spend the night. Then I can't remember how old I was, but a point came where my dad came over after having visited him for a while, where he kind of told me he wasn't going to be around anymore. And so he wasn't. He went off to work, and I didn't see him for maybe a year or two after that. I was pretty young, probably. I had to have been like 6 or 5 or something like that. I don't remember, but I remember sitting on the swing at my grandma's house and him sitting me on there and telling me he wasn't going to see me anymore. And then that was it. And he kind of just left. And then he moved to Durango, and I might be getting this timeline screwed up somewhere, but he moved to Durango, and they lived there, and next thing I know, I'm having to go visit him for weeks at a time, and I was just absolutely terrified. I remember being so relieved when he told me I couldn't see him. And being so terrified when I had to again. When I was seeing him every other weekend, that was really the first time that I saw his temper. That was the first time that I actually like saw it firsthand. And so I was really, really scared to go down there. And so we went down there. Or I did, and I would have to go for, I don't know, 6 weeks at a time during the summer, and I think 2 weeks during the winter time. And I was so scared that I would stay up for like days at a time, just because I was afraid that if I went to sleep, I'd wake up somewhere else. I was afraid, like, in the middle of the night, he'd sneak me off somewhere or something, or I don't know. I was just terrified. So I would take like cold showers and stuff just so that I didn't have to go to sleep and so that I could stay awake. And I'd try to make my stepbrother and stepsister stay up with me. And I'd do everything that they told me and everything they said just so that they'd want to be around me. So they could be there to see. So I just felt like I would be protected if they were around. And so, yeah, I would just stay up for days. And and just not sleep. And so during all this time when I was visiting him, you know, he drank a lot. And, you know, I'm trying to impress my brother and sister, my stepbrother and stepsister. And so I started smoking. My dad smoked also, but I started smoking. I was probably about 12 years old. And that was like the thing that helped my stepbrother and stepsister bond with me, especially my stepsister. Every time she wanted to smoke, I would go out with her and smoke. Every time that she, like, even hinted at lighting a cigarette up, I'd go out with her just as long as I could be around somebody. And my stepsister and I got really close. I always really depended on her, whether she knew it or not, to make me feel safe and to make me feel protected. I would take every chance I had to get away with her, you know, go on walks or hang out with her friends and her, or play shopping mall board games, anything I could just to not be alone at the house with my dad. So I got through the first summer. I think they didn't actually force me to go the entire time because I was just so, like, stressed out and terrified. And so they, they didn't make me go the whole time. It was amazing. I got to go home. And then, you know, I spent my first Christmas there. That was okay. It wasn't the worst. I think it was short, so I was just relieved that it was, you know, only 2 weeks, and got to go home pretty quick. But the next summer, that's where things really started to change for me. The next summer that I had to go visit, I ended up spending a lot of time in Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona. My dad was working down there, and he would drop me off at these people's house. And so I basically never really saw him. He would drop me off like 5-6 in the morning. I'd stay there all day until 6-7 o'clock at night. And then we basically just go home and go to bed. So it was great. The time passed quickly, and I made friends, and that was that. And I went home, and that's kind of continued, you know, for a couple years. I think the very last time that I went there, I was 12, 13, something like that. But that summer was probably the easiest summer of the entire time. I think the hardest summer that I had down there was when he was working in New Mexico. We were staying in a trailer, like this little RV type trailer. I'm not really sure what you'd call it. But we were staying in that in New Mexico. And again, he was working, so he left me with the people that own the property during the day and go to work and come home and pick me up. On occasion, he'd take me with him to work, and I'd sit in the truck all day while he walked around and, you know, did his job. But mostly I stayed with these people. So during this time, my dad was like really, really heavily drinking. Like, he was getting pretty much wasted every night and passing out, and then I'd end up just kind of being by myself. I'm probably like 9 or 10 years old at this point. I remember there was a specific night, and this is where I really, really started fearing my dad. There's this one night where, you know, I asked him if I could call my mom. That was like the one comfort I had, was to call my mom and speak with her. Like, especially right before bed. I don't know what it was, but right before bed, that was when I wanted to speak to her the most. So he had told me I could call her. I walked out of the trailer and went to go call. He had passed out while he was drunk. So I'm on the phone with her in this payphone at the end of the road. And I had a calling card because I had to use calling cards back then. It was before cell phones and stuff. So I'm on the payphone with her, and all of a sudden my dad skids up in his truck, his red truck, and grabs me by my arm, yanks me out of the payphone. He's screaming at me in the middle of the parking lot there, or the little dirt parking lot, dirt road. He's yelling at me. In the middle of the night, it's got to be like 8 or 9 o'clock, and yelling at me, cussing at me, yanking me out of the phone booth. And I remember like reaching back in, screaming, like just trying to hang the phone up. I remember that was like, I have to hang up the phone. I can't just leave it hanging here. And so he shoves me in the truck and then gets back to the trailer, yanks me out of the trailer, or yanks me out of the truck, pushes me up the stairs, and I hit the fridge kind of hard. And he sits me down and just starts yelling at me. And I didn't understand, because I knew he had told me I could call her. And, you know, looking back on it, I know he was worried, but the point was that he just, like, he had passed out. He completely passed out and forgot even telling me, you know. And that, to me, that was the scariest thing, was he like, he was, that's the first time I really saw him as like a monster, I think. And so the next summer I didn't want to go. And so my mom and her new husband at that time, I had told them what happened. They didn't make me go. We went to Missouri instead and stayed with my stepdad's parents and had like a great time, and hung out on the lake in Missouri, and I just didn't have to go, and it was the best. And so my dad was angry about that, of course, and took my mom to court, and he took her to jail, or, well, she was held in contempt of court, of course, and she went to jail for 7 days, and I hated him, and I was there at the courtroom, and I yelled at him as he's walking out the door, and I told him I hated him, and he laughed in my face and told me good. And he just laughed at me. And that was the last thing I remembered of him when I was a kid, was him laughing right in my face. I thought that was evil. but that was kind of who he was. He wanted to get back at people whenever he could, and he really wanted to get back at my mom. And so I guess the reason why I gave all that background is I kind of wanted to explain what it was like when I was put in charge of all of his medical decisions and everything like that. I wanted to kind of explain the confliction, because, yeah, I was scared of him when I was a kid. And after that, I didn't talk to my dad until I was 24, I think. So around 11 or 12 years, I didn't speak to him anymore. That was it. That was the last time I talked to him. He called me, or he might have even written me a letter. And he kind of just gave up and said, "You don't have to come anymore." And he relinquished his rights, like officially in the court, and didn't make me go anymore. And there was a lot of other stuff. I mean, when we went to New Mexico, he, you know, crashed his trailer while he was drinking, and, you know, I was in the car, and he had left me at gas stations and stuff while he went and bought beer and, you know, told me not to tell. And he left me at casinos in the parking lot while he went and gambled. I mean, there were just a lot of things that were wrong that I didn't realize until I was older. But for me, it was about the fear. So he relinquished his rights and I didn't have to go anymore. And I was free. I felt like the anxiety was just gone. I mean, every year I hated when school was over because I knew as soon as school ended, I had to go. I had to go visit him. And that was gone. I didn't have that anymore. And I was so glad. And so anyway, I didn't talk to him again until I was 24. And that was when I was having my first child. And my wife kind of talked me into it and said I should speak to him. Maybe he had changed. I mean, I was different. You know, I was an adult now and having my own kid. So I wrote him an email, him and my stepmom. And so we reconnected and they came out and visited and met my son. And they were there for his first birthday and things were just really good at that point. I knew I was a grown up. He couldn't hurt me. He couldn't do anything anymore. You know, I was stronger than him finally. There was nothing he could do to me to hurt me. And I think us being equals in that sense, maybe he got, you know, some respect for me, or maybe he felt sorry or shame. I'm not sure, but things were different. And so over the course of the next couple of years, we got really close. And I would say my dad and I got maybe even closer than my mom and I were. Much closer. My dad and I are the same person, really. He and I are so similar in so many ways that it's just kind of scary. I mean, the only real difference is how important my wife and my kids are and how important I take being a father and a husband. Those things are the two most important things in the world to me. And I think my dad really didn't have that. He kind of was the kind of person that winning at the end of the day was the most important thing to him. In any aspect, he really wanted to win. He always wanted to come first. And he did a lot of times. I mean, he ran a business that was highly successful and pretty big. And that was his identity. And so during this period, you know, I often worried that he was going to think that I wanted his money or that I wanted, you know, something from him. And I'm not sure. I think maybe he always thought that. I know when he died, he thought that. And I think that's probably the saddest thing to me is that he thought I cared about that stuff and I never did. You know, I just really wanted to have a father-son relationship. And we did for a period. And I thought that was the best thing in the world. I always wanted a dad growing up, really bad, and I didn't really have a great one until I was 24, and that really only lasted until I was maybe, I don't know, 29, 30 years old. And then that's when we stopped talking again. So, 2016 was a year where I think my dad was maybe going through a lot of personal things, but my dad had the tendency, which I think a lot of us have to take it out on everybody else and blame everybody else. And, you know, he had done this before. We had had arguments or whatever, and he had said some really terrible things. But, you know, this is the year that I was going through my own stuff too, and I didn't really need that. And I just really wanted to have somebody to confide in or be supportive. And he just, I don't know. He just got really terrible. He got really mean. And I remember one time he told me I should kill myself. And we stopped talking for a little bit after that, but I forgave him and we started talking again. And after that, you know, I was always kind of walking on eggshells because I didn't know if I was going to get, you know, drunk dad or sober dad or drunk nice dad or drunk mean dad, or, you know, I didn't really know who I was going to get, and I couldn't really trust him around my kids anymore. My wife and I, Robin, she had gone down with me with our son Asher when she was pregnant with our second son. We went and visited him in Durango, and that's the first time my wife really saw him drinking too. So he you know, he would drink and drive all the time, and he was, I remember one time, at one point we were following behind him. He had his boat hooked up to his truck. We were following behind him, and he was like smoking and marijuana and drinking, and my uncle was in the car with him, and he was swerving all over the road, and I thought for sure we were going to watch them crash. And luckily we made it to the boat, but, you know, he proceeded to drink and smoke the rest of the day while we're on the boat with him. And all I could think was, like, you know, I had asked him not to do that because I had my son and my wife, my pregnant wife, with me, and he just couldn't help himself. And so, you know, by the end of the day, he's so drunk he couldn't put his boat on the trailer. And that's really the first time that my wife got a taste of, like, the person he was. You know, you hit on my wife while we're down there right in front of me. And that's just kind of the person that he became when he was drinking. He just did whatever and whenever he wanted, and it's kind of everyone else's fault. And then he'd maybe apologize if he, you know, thought he crossed the line, or he'd tell you he was joking. And so by the time I was, you know, 29, this had all gotten pretty old. And he'd said so many things to me that I just didn't want to deal with anymore. And I think really the final straw was when he told my son he promised him he'd come see him for his birthday. And then he ended up going on a road trip by himself instead and just decided not to come, didn't call him or anything, and just never showed up. And I decided right there, I'm not letting this man do this to my family too. You know, because he did that my whole life, promised me things and didn't show up, or promised me to go do something and we never did it. I mean, camping trips, fishing, even dumb things like going to Mesa Verde, like anything. You know, promising he'd come pick me up that weekend or show up when I was really, really little. And I wasn't going to let him do that to my family. And so I stopped contact with him again. And this kind of brings us up to a point where we had ceased contact, and now he's in the hospital. So, you know, when I found out he was in the hospital, I was just so shocked. I don't know if I've ever felt that kind of shock in my life. I had no feeling at all. It's just gone. It was like I was just hollow inside. It was like I didn't even know what feelings were. is a really hard thing to accept. You know, and there was a point where he was in the hospital and he started getting better, and I was making plans for him to go to rehab and talking to the doctors about it and trying to find treatment centers, and I just thought we were going to get a chance to make things right. And I don't know, you know, even at 32, I still wanted that relationship. I still wanted that father-son relationship. I guess maybe that's something that never goes away. Maybe I'll always want it. And it's really hard to think about, even just thinking about him being gone is difficult. It doesn't seem real still. I mean, it's been almost 4 weeks and I still can't. It doesn't make sense to me. I've said this a lot to the few people I have told. I don't really miss the man. He wasn't the best man in the world. He wasn't a great father. We had a period where we did get really close. He was the only, out loud especially, the only person that really told me he was proud of me. Or that I was... He told me he was proud of me all the time when we were talking. And that always meant more to me than he'll ever know. But I don't miss the man. I miss the relationship that we had and the relationship we could have had. That's what I miss. I miss knowing that even if we aren't talking, that he exists. Knowing that I could just call him up if I really wanted to. And he could apologize and I could apologize and we could fix things and he could meet my other two kids who he never got to meet. I really miss him existing, because at least if he was around, there's that chance that he could get better, or things could get better. But I don't think, you know, that's not something people really think about. I was so angry at him, I thought, this is going to sound cold, but I thought, you know, when he passed away, it would just be this thing that happened, and I wasn't talking to him anyway, but, you know, I guess it's because you're stupid and you don't really realize or accept or think that those things could ever happen. But they can at any time. All I can think about is how good things were at one point. And, you know, you think about what if. I mean, that's what everyone thinks about. Well, what if we would just call each other? What if we just said sorry? What if we just talked? But those things aren't possible now, obviously. So, I will say, you know, there's some anger at him. I definitely have some anger towards him still. He could have... He could have tried, you know. I could have too. And I can tell you honestly, I never would have tried. I think that I was done being treated that way at as an adult, and I don't think I would have ever tried again. And I'm not sure that was the right decision, but it's the one I made, and the one I made to protect my family. I thought, you know, that I was doing the right thing, and I'll live with that forever and accept it as long as my family was the main reason why I made that decision. And they were. But, you know, I think that the anger really comes from the fact that there's just no apology ever. He just acted like it never happened almost. We just stopped talking and then he just disappeared. That was it. And as far as, you know, I've been told, things didn't go well in the last couple of years for him. And as I'm finding out now, as an executor of his estate, they weren't well at all. And that's even, you know, I don't even know how to, it's even more sad because I just know he was really depressed, and I just feel like if we were in each other's lives, maybe things would have been different for him. Maybe he would have seen a reason to try harder. I mean, with 3 grandchildren, you know. I know he loved my son. He was very proud of being a grandfather. I really had hoped that he would be a great grandfather. You know, the best grandfather. And I just don't think he really had it in him at the end of the day. He used to joke that when he died, he wanted us to prop him up against a tree and leave him next to his rifle and just let the earth take him. And that's a great description of who my dad was. He really wanted to do the most shocking and easiest thing. And the thing that he thought would be unique, I guess. I don't know. He was definitely a funny guy. I don't know. I think some of the best times that I did have with him were, this will sound funny, but counseling. We went to counseling when I was a kid, after I had first started going down there for the summer to visit him for a few weeks. My stepmom recommended counseling for us, and so we started doing that. And I remember leaving there that year and like actually thinking to myself, like, I'm actually going to miss this guy this time. Almost those exact words. I'm actually going to miss this guy this time. I remember I gave him a big hug. Even though he smelled like cigarettes, I gave him like the biggest hug that I could. And then my family picked me up and I got in a van and we went to Mexico for the summer, for the rest of the summer. But that was the year before New Mexico. So, you know, I'm not really sure what happened in between there, but yeah. you know, and I don't want to sit here and act like he was the worst person in the world. He wasn't a great dad. I think he just didn't know how to be. And I think alcoholism really got in the way of that. And I would say I'd credit him with me stopping drinking because I saw myself becoming him. And I stopped it before it affected my family the way his alcoholism affected mine, or affected me and my mom. And, you know, so if he hadn't been that way, I don't know if I would have had it in me to quit. So that's one good thing that came out of it. But just as a person, he was a really impressive person. He got a job with the government by, well, he would say it himself, by lying on his resume. And worked his way up until he started his own road construction company. And that company became really successful. And he became a multimillionaire, which he bragged about all the time. And got really annoying. But he was proud. And, you know, I mean, I can't take that from him. He should have been proud. That's a major accomplishment. Coming from Wayne, Michigan, little suburb outside of Detroit, he made a name for himself, and he was a powerful figure in his community, in Durango, and he was very smart. He was a great person to talk to. He always gave the best advice anytime you asked him. I remember there was a period where my wife and I were going through some hard times, and he advised me a lot, and he made me feel a lot better about being a stay-at-home dad when I was first becoming a stay-at-home dad. And he took a lot of that shame away from me. You know, I was raised that the man was supposed to be the man, and that's how my uncles all wanted me to be, and my grandma. You know, my mom wasn't really like that so much, but definitely my uncles. I was supposed to be the man. And if I wasn't being the man, then I wasn't being anything. My dad really made me feel better about that. He really took that shame and kind of made me realize how dumb it was to think that way. And kind of made me feel like I was doing something important, taking care of my son and doing that while my wife was working. So I'll always appreciate that. He was an imposing person. He was very direct. He was very blunt for the most part, and he would kind of just tell it like it is. He had this confidence about himself. I mean, he was maybe the most confident person I'd ever seen in my life. He would go strike up a conversation with anybody and talk their ear off for hours and hours if he could, and laugh with them and make inappropriate jokes. And just really never care about what other people thought about him. I always admired that. You know, I always wished I had that kind of confidence that my dad had. It's not something you can fake, though. He just had it. He was a people person. I mean, he loved being around people. He loved talking to people. And I think, you know, a lot of the troubles he had in his later life were because he had become so isolated. And was drinking quite a bit. And ultimately, that's what had a major impact on the end of his life, was the alcohol abuse. So, you know, there were a lot of things that I admired about my dad. We had a very complicated relationship. I was very angry with him for a really long time. And I wish I could have told him I was angry with him and why. So that he could have understood, or so we could have fixed things or apologized to each other. I never really got that chance, and I'm as much at fault for that as anybody else. Yeah, well, as him. I could have picked up the phone at any time, and I chose not to. So, yeah. My dad died on November 28th, and he's gone now, and there's nothing I can do about it. And if I ever want to tell him I'm sorry, I have to say it in the wind. And if I ever want to tell him he's an asshole, I have to say it into the wind. And if I ever want to tell him how proud I am of my kids, or how proud I am of him, you know, then I kind of just have to say it into the wind. And so, you know, I've got this little urn and it has my dad's ashes in it. And it's odd because he's like in there and, but he's not here anymore. And so it's just this thing. And it doesn't, you would never know who he was. And even though he could be a really bad person at times, he was also maybe the one person who made me feel like an equal. The one person maybe who I felt like really understood me a lot of times. Or maybe it was just that I wanted his approval so bad. You know, I guess I'm still trying to figure that out, and maybe I will be for the rest of my life. Maybe none of this matters. Maybe I'm just talking to talk. You know, I think there's a lot of me that hasn't really dealt with it. And I don't know. I guess I felt like I owed it to people to explain it, and I didn't really want to talk to everybody. So I figured I'll just do it like this. And also I think to really explain or at least process myself how it feels or how it felt to be put in charge of his, you know, to be a surrogate and then now having to deal with the aftermath of this person that I wasn't even speaking to. And just, you know, now I feel responsible for, or I am responsible for. You know, I really wanted him to make it. I really did. I didn't get to speak to him before he died. They put the phone up to his ear, but I really wanted him to make it. I was hoping that we could talk. I was hoping we could fix things. When he didn't, that's when the real work started, I guess. That's when it really hit me. And I'm not even sure it has fully hit me still, but it kind of sinks in a little bit more every day. It's weird. I have this like picture of him in my mind, and it's almost like it's fading. It's almost like it's disappearing. And I don't know if that's just because we were estranged or if it's just because that's how it happens. I don't know. I mean, I've lost people before that were close to me, but I feel like I barely knew him. But I also feel like we knew each other really well at the same time. And I feel like we were so similar that I could make decisions and he would know I was making the right ones. So I feel like we were kind of in tune that way, but yeah, I've got this picture of him in my mind and I don't even know where it's from or how it got there. If it's a moment in my life that I don't remember. But it's like this freeze frame and it just disappears. It's like I try to hold on to that image and remember it, and it's almost like it's running for me. And so that's really weird. But I think I'm just rambling at this point. But yeah, I just wanted to explain to everybody why the dad talk comes up almost every episode. It was a defining thing in my life was my dad being there and not being there. With him gone now, I think I'm just kind of trying to figure that out. I'm trying to figure out how it affects me and who I am as a person. So it might come up more. It might not. Maybe doing this, which I'm not sure I'm even going to post. So I guess if you hear it, you got the answer. But I guess I'm just trying to figure out how to deal with all of this. You know, how do you oversee someone's estate that you barely talk to and not feel guilty? Like, all I feel is guilt. I just feel guilty. I have to be in charge of this thing that I never even asked for. And for this person that I wasn't even talking to. And then try to make the best decisions for that person, for my family, for my kids. How do you deal with that? I don't even understand what's happening or why it's happening. But you know, like, I don't have a choice. I think I'm just tired. I'm just really tired of thinking. I'm really tired of being responsible. And I just wish he was here to do it himself. And he's not. And I wish he knew that I never wanted anything from him but to be his son. Even at 32, I wish I didn't talk so much so that this podcast wasn't a fucking hour of me rambling about my dad and our shitty relationship. Because nobody wants to fucking hear that. But I felt like I owed it to everyone. Or at least my friends. I think a lot of them don't even know. So. A lot of my family doesn't know. But, yeah, if you made it this far, thank you guys for listening. I appreciate it. Probably won't do any more like this for a while. Hopefully not, anyway. I don't want to do any more venting or preaching or anything by myself. This podcast is supposed to be about me with other people, getting to know them, not me airing out my life for an hour. So, I guess I just want to say that in the end, I loved my dad. He knew me better than anybody. And I will always hold very dear those few years we had together where we really knew each other. We really understood each other. Where he really made me feel like an equal and feel like a person. Nobody had ever done that for me before. And I think that was a hole that I always had in me. Growing up, my whole life, I think that's the one thing that I needed. And I think growing up without a dad, you just have this void. And I can still feel it a lot of times. It's like this space that you'll never ever fill, especially now. It's just this part of you that's missing. This part where you had to teach yourself to do things, where you had to teach yourself to be a man, where you had to teach yourself to be a father, and you had to teach yourself to shave and how to talk to girls. And, you know, you had to teach yourself a lot of these things that this person's supposed to show you. And I think I grew up really confused as a kid, and especially in my household, where there's like a tug of war over morals and lessons and things like that. It's just so confusing as a kid growing up. And I think that's why I took a lot of my morals and a lot of my direction from TV. You know, TV families like Full House and Bill Cosby and, you know, things like that. The Seavers from Growing Pains. Those families, like, I grew up thinking that's what families were. I grew up with these expectations that if these situations happened to me, they would play out exactly like they did on TV. I grew up thinking that that's how dads were supposed to be, and that's how moms were supposed to be, and that's how kids were supposed to be. And I had no idea that that stuff was just for TV. I knew it was fake, but I thought the lessons were real and the morals were real, and I thought that's like how life was. And so it was a big surprise to me to find out that none of that stuff was true. So as a kid, without, you know, growing up like that without a father, it's a really confusing world. And so I think that hole is always going to be there. And I just have to make sure that my kids never have that same hole. I have to make sure that I'm the best possible father that they'll ever see. Because they deserve it. Every kid does. So, I hope that if you take anything from this podcast, this episode, that it's think very carefully about how you treat each other. And that you can be proud of your actions at the end of the day, no matter what decisions you make. And think very carefully about who you cut out of your life. Because you might never get to speak to them again. And you have to live with that, for better or worse. And you have to accept it. And you have to be able to accept it. So, thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate it. And hopefully there won't be too many more like this. Hopefully one. But thank you.